ways that we have to locate what really happened. But in that place, you are in such, and when I learned from all the more from Rob Ballot himself and the research, how the suspense, the sense of the walls closing in on you, the claustrophobia, the paranoia, and the fact that he started to elicit all of these signs of illness as a result of what he was going through, and the way he was alienated from his coworkers and distance from his family, like the isolation that you are put through when you are challenging systems of power in that manner, whether you're a lawyer or whether you're a journalist, it's similar. And there is all kinds of cinematic methods available to you to express that. But often it's through kinds of restraint. And the, you know, the Gordon Willis cinematography of those three films I mentioned is right. Indistinguishable from their power. And all of that was part of the inspiration for Dark Waters.
You've been listening to an interview with film director Todd Haynes, whose most recent film is May, December. I'm Rich Walensky on Book.
I'm Mr. KBOO.FM. Them should have know it's accurate. Kabaka Pyramid say, watch your step, you know what I mean?
Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. The Metal March returns again in 2025, featuring 10 hours of live bands and DJ sets from your favorite KBOO metal hosts. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Text KBOO to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give to donate. And tune in to the Metal March, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Metal takes over the airwaves for the Metal March Metal Marathon, only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, and welcome to the March edition of Black Book Talk. We are welcoming a friend, Beck, for this program. We're welcoming author Bridget M. Davis, and we want to hear about her new book, Love Rita, An American Story of Sisterhood, Joy, Loss, and Legacy. But those of us who are with us every month know that she was also with us a few years ago discussing her book, The World According to Fannie Davis, about her fascinating mother. So welcome, Bridget. And
thank you.
Yeah, the folks are online, so I'll let my co-host say hi. This is Patricia Welch, and with me are
Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman. Hello.
Hello.
I think Obi, are you there? He's going to be our silent partner today. I don't think so. Okay, we'll wait till he decides to come in. But Bridget, well, first of all, let's get the pronunciation. In the book, it is written that you actually prefer the pronunciation or Bridget, not Bridget.
Yes.
So which one should be? Bridget. All right.
Bridget. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining us. And tell us about your sister. Tell us a little bit about why you chose to write this book.
Yes. First of all, it is so nice to be back. Thank you for inviting me back. It's a pleasure. I am writing about my sister Rita, who was 4 years older than me and who really modeled for me a way to live boldly, even before she actually found herself suffering from lupus. She was this extraordinary and dynamic presence in my life. Right? She was the first one in our family to go to college and get a master's degree. She went on to get this corporate job as a, you know, corporate buyer, which we thought was, I thought was just extraordinary. And then she was fun. She decided to become an amateur belly dancer. And she was a, you know, we're from Detroit. So at one point she decided, hey, I think I'll be a car test driver. Why not? And then eventually she settled into a very successful career as a special ed teacher. So here I am, her younger sister, just looking on, looking up to her and thinking, this is really a model of what I can do and be. I don't have to choose. I can strive to really, really excel in things that interest me. And so in that way, she was such an influence. But really what made me write the book is that Rita, at age 20, was diagnosed with lupus. And so I was also a witness to her struggle with this chronic illness. And I'm sorry to say that she lost her battle with it at a very young age. She was just 44 years old. So fast forward, I'm a writer. I do like to write about my family, as you know. I wrote this memoir about my mom, The World According to Fannie Davis. And Patricia, you'll probably remember, I talk about Rita a lot in that book because she was instrumental in helping my mom with the business, with the numbers, you know. So she was a, you know, really integral part of the story of our family. But at and this point in my life...
A fascinating family. Sorry to go on.
Thank you. At this point in my life, I thought, you know, actually, I think it's important to really try to chronicle what her actual accomplishments and challenges were, because I think it has resonance for sort of looking at the effects, essentially, honestly, of discrimination, and more specifically, systemic racism on Black life. We hear about it, but I thought maybe I can show everyone a very specific individual example of someone who was impacted in that way. So I chose to tell Rita's story. Rita lived through the second half of the 20th century, so it also felt like she was a good kind of symbol of what life has been like for Black folks across those decades. So yeah, that's a very long way of saying I felt that the story could be instructional and it could be inspirational, and it was one that I wanted to share with the world, essentially.
Was Rita your only sister, or did you have other siblings?
I had other siblings, and I will say to you that part of the reason I chose to write this book, too, is honestly, people thought that my big secret was that my mother was a numbers runner. That was a secret in our family. But I had a bigger secret that I did not share much at all in the first book. And that secret is that my own siblings all died prematurely in middle age. I mean, none of them lived, you know, past their 40s. And I had not talked about that before. It was a kind of dark secret. And so when I decided to write about Rita, I was also deciding to honor and celebrate all of my siblings, because we are not just the way we died. We are how we lived. And so that became an opportunity to be brave in a lot of ways, you know? Yeah. So I just took the plunge.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were finished.
No, that's fine.
Okay. One of the things that impressed me is that you did make the case for how living in a racially oppressive culture causes what I think the term that was used was weathering, how Black people and other people who are under constant, unrelenting stress, that our bodies are influenced by this. Our bodies are worn down. Our ability to recover from, to withstand certain illnesses is caused by this. And I love that you went to the experts. I mean, you didn't just put your opinion out there. I love that you have citations from so many different experts in the field about how this constant battering of marginalized people influences our health, and that frequently, you know, we think people died because they didn't do this, they died because they didn't do that, they died because they drank too much, they died because they did drugs. But if you go back a little farther, that really isn't the case. So could you talk a little bit about just your decision to really make the medical case for how racism bore down, not just on your family members, but just on marginalized people in general?
Yes, I really love how you describe that, because I think you capture it really effectively. I had this experience back in 2018 where I was reading a New York Times Magazine article by someone who's actually a friend. The piece was all about black mothers dying in childbirth, dying in childbirth at like two or three times the rate of white women, right? And all of this, like, high rates of infant mortality amongst black people as well. And so she was really exploring what this is about. Not what you would think. It's not about these women not caring for themselves and all of the things that have been sort of explained that are really stereotypical and negative. She actually talked about this term weathering. She spoke to the woman who coined the term. This was a doctor named Dr. Arlene Geronimus. And when she described it in that article several years ago, I'm going to tell you, I read it and I thought, it was like something all fell into place. And I realized this explains Rita's life. This explains many of my loved ones' lives. Well, what did it explain? Weathering is literally the word she said. She chose it because black people and many marginalized people really weather all of the discrimination that comes at them. But in doing so, it weathers their body. You know, it's a physiological effect. It just, like, creates so much toxic stress in the body, right? This systemic racism that inevitably you're going to have health problems. And you're right. People will try to suggest that, oh, you don't have a good diet, you need to lose weight, you're not exercising, you're not meditating enough. But when you're up against constant pressure from society, relentless and nonstop pressure, you cannot offset that with a healthy diet. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So Rita was diagnosed at 20 and died at 44. What about her health care? Did she have good teams where she lived?
Well, here's the thing that's really fascinating. She was lucky because she was diagnosed properly right away. Most black women, who, by the way, suffer lupus disproportionately, no surprise there, most black women are not diagnosed properly at first. They're not taken seriously. They're given the wrong diagnosis. They're told there's nothing wrong, etc. She was under the care of a rheumatologist from diagnosis. And yet, even with doctor's care, even with her being the type of person who took her medication properly, never drank, lived a life that wasn't as much as possible, wasn't too stressful. She tried to do all the things, as they say. She even chose, ultimately, a career that she felt wouldn't be as taxing as the corporate career she started out with. Even with all of that, Rita suffered major adverse symptoms from her lupus. So I began to ask the simple question, why? Why Rita? Why didn't she manage to survive this? And as I looked at her life, I thought, well, we take these things as just, oh, it's just the way it is. But in fact, it shouldn't be the way it is. And what do I mean? The way she was treated in her corporate job, the stress she was put under there, the discrimination she faced. I give another example in the book of how the man she bought her home from in Detroit literally tried to snatch it back from her, and she had to do battle to retain her house. These kinds of things are terribly taxing on an already compromised body. And that's just two examples. And I just thought, there's a correlation here. Absolutely.
Bridget, this is O.B. Hill, community historian. And
yes, hello.
How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
I really appreciate the way you intertwined and wove numerology, genealogy, and history within the context of also the medical industry as well as college and historical black institutions. Mm-hmm. How did you go about figuring that type of thing out?
Well, thanks for pointing that out. You know, I'm someone who just believes that everyone's story is filled with complexity. And I think so often for black life, people have not allowed that complexity. They have not given us our full humanity. They flatten our story. I'm all about adding complexity back to our story. And so I think that to tell the story properly, you do have to talk about our history, say with HBCUs and our religious beliefs and our understanding of the power of numerology, our genealogy, our history, you know, our ancestral roots. All of these things are important in helping to explore and understand as best we can a human being's life. And so that felt really important, and it also felt natural to me. I mean, this is my way of telling stories. It feels like, it's almost like I'm investigating, you know, I'm going on this journey to investigate what are all of the elements that help make up this story, that help explain, for instance, someone like Rita's life. I just want people to walk away from it and really feel like they understand this human being.
You know, I'm glad that you've raised this point, because I want to emphasize that the title of the book has the words joy in it, legacy. Mm-hmm. And you know, I got to tell you, I thought this in reading the first book, and I feel it again in this one. No life is full. I mean, we all have hardships. No life is full of doom and gloom. And quite frankly, your sister had some real joy in her life. First of all, now I'm mad because nobody gave me a sports car for my 16th birthday, but I can't really take that up with anybody. But thanks to your family's financial situation, you were able to do a lot of things that many black people can't. I love the idea. And living in Detroit, you know, I lived there 20 years. I recognize the name. When you are going to somebody else's sweet 16 party and your mama has a designer to come in and make your dress, you know, I think
and
there's some
you
joy
knew
in
that.
That.
Name. You knew that name, didn't you?
I knew that name. You were, you know, you were just taking me back. I'm like, oh yeah, and this and the Poncha train and oh, wonderful. So, tell us some of the joyous things of just being young, being sisters, living the life of a comfortable family in Detroit. Because I also think that people need to know that about people who live, black folks who live in big cities like Detroit, Baltimore, whatever, that there is also joy in our lives, contrary to what the media might tell you.
Oh, I believe Detroit was like the pinnacle of beautiful black life. That's my bias, but I feel like I could make the argument, you know? And it was the confluence of things, wasn't it? It was those enterprising black folks who migrated there.
Yes.
Those were the enterprising ones, you know? They knew they were coming to work in factories. They wanted to make it happen. And for a while, Detroit had the largest number of black homeowners in the country.
You're absolutely right.
Right? And also, we had Motown. We had the auto industry. We had so many examples of success around us.
Yes.
And yes, we were a majority black city. And so we saw in one another, reflected back at us, what was possible.
Yes. Tell us a little bit. I want you to also continue with it, but get into your sister, because your sister, one, appeared to be a cutie pie, yes. And charming as she could be. Just talk about her effect on the people around her.
I mean, Rita was so charismatic. You know those people who walk into a room and they light it up? That was her. And not only because of her personality, she had this quality. She saw you. She never looked through anyone or past anyone. She would see you. And she had this natural empathy, this understanding that everybody was equal and no one was better than anyone else. And people felt that from her. So everyone thought that she was their best friend, you know? So I really think that that's part of what her whole charisma was about. Very giving and loving at the same time, but also fly. I'm telling you, Rita was dazzling. Like, you walk into a room and you see her, she's standing out. And in the best way, you know, like she would say, I like being flashy. But it was cool because her flashy was stylish. She was really like the first diva I knew. But not diva like
that's Cardi. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, she was like both diva-like and embracing and warm and approachable, if that seems even possible. That was her, you know. And so that was really the thing about her that all of us, not just me as her little sister, all of us in her orbit really loved that about her. We were really impressed with her.
It sounds like, quote unquote, we can't use his real name, but yet Zachary seemed to never have gotten over her. So I said, you know, she had lupus, but she also had love and laughter in her life. So this is a good thing. I mean, I think it's important for us to show that too.
She also had love and laughter. Love and laughter. That's right. Yes, you're right. You know, when you write a book and you go back, it's a kind of beautiful but weird experience, because I'm going back into the past. I'm talking to people who really cared about her but haven't really talked about her in decades, right? It's because of me that I'm kind of bringing things up. And in the case of her, the love of her life, whom I will call Zachary, that's what I call him in the book, he was really feeling, I could tell in our talk, that he was really feeling all these things for her again, and literally said to me, oh my God, she told me I was going to miss her one day, and she was right.
Yeah.
And he said, I had never had that kind of relationship with anyone that was all the things, including an intellectual relationship. They had a meeting of the minds too, because my sister was extremely smart on top of everything else, right? Yeah.
So did Rita marry this love of her life and have children?
She did not marry the love of her life. The reason he asked me to use a pseudonym is because he married someone else. Mm-hmm. And he is still married to that someone else. And he actually said to me, I might have made a mistake. I think she was the love of his life.
I think so too.
That's nice.
Too. You know, he said to me, I don't know, she was so dynamic, she would speak her mind. She wouldn't let you get away with anything. He's like, maybe I was a little afraid. I don't know. Because you know how it can be sometimes. She was someone who spoke her mind. And she said, you know, I love me. And I'm only going to be with someone who loves me in the same way.
All right.
So with Rita leaving home at 16 to go off to college, and she was the light of the household. What was that like, and for the family?
Oh, we missed her. Oh, my goodness. The other thing was,
everyone said that Rita and my mother were so much alike. They were very close. They couldn't be closer. And so I know my mom missed her a lot too. And when it was the two of them in the house, it was just something to witness, you know? I was the quiet one, but I was happy to just watch them. You know, the way they could laugh and talk and gossip together and share information and have debates and bring all these people. Both of them were people magnets. So they were just bringing people in who wanted to be in their orbit. And so when Rita went away to school at a tender age of 16, our household felt the loss, you know? We couldn't wait for her to come home for her vacations because she was so generous in the sense that she would bring her world to you. She could tell stories that make you feel. I swear, she went to Fisk University. I felt like I was at Fisk by the time she got home telling these stories. And I knew I was going to a black college because I was just riveted. She also was at Fisk at a really unique time in its history and culture. And so she brought that culture into our lives. You know, one of those people who brings you along.
Although you were in a family that had somewhat the same type of problems of conflict and envious and everything, you also mentioned the male presence in your family, and I think that is very, very good. Could you explain your relationship with your father?
Oh, yes. My father was so loving and so affectionate with all of his children, all five of us, and deeply loved us, and he let us know it, too. There was no question. And I think that absolutely had an impact on myself and Rita. We just moved through the world knowing that the first man in our lives adored us. In her case, she said, that means I'm not compromising. So she didn't ultimately find a life partner, but she had great relationships with men, all of whom treated her well. And she had, you know, a good time with them. And in my case, same thing. I had a model for the kind of man I wanted to share my life with. And everyone teases me in my family, and they say, you found someone who adores you as much as Daddy did, you know? I laugh about it, but that presence was key. That was really important to have this our father make it clear to us that we were special and amazing girls, and then later even as young women. So I feel really grateful for that. I love that Rita, in a life that ended up not being a very long life, I'm so grateful that she had that love from her father and she understood how adored she was. That makes me happy.
We have about, I'd say, 2 or 3 minutes left. I don't want to close this without asking you about, Naked Acts of Love. What would you call it? Your newsletter?
Yes.
You actually mentioned the book in one of your segment. But tell us a little bit about that so that people can keep in touch with you if they'd like to.
Yes, thank you for asking. So Substack is, as many people may know, it's a newsletter platform that allows people to read others' newsletters in a public format. So you just go to substack.com, you put my name in, Brigette M. Davis, and there's my actual newsletter. I call it Naked Acts of Love, and I write weekly essays about all kinds of topics, including my sister Rita, and that way, if you want to follow me, you can do so.
I thank you for introducing us to your family. I have to admit, I am still fascinated by your mama. She did well on all of you.
She did.
So I'm happy you brought her story. And I'm also happy that you brought the joy and the laughter, as well as the reality, you know, of living with a chronic disease, being a person of color. We need to be aware of these things. And some of us need to read these things and go, oh, I'm not crazy. That is real. So I thank you for bringing that to the program. And I'm going to say my farewell, and I'll leave my co-hosts the opportunity to say their last words.
Thank you.
for the interview, and we look forward to your next book.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you all for your support. It means a lot to me. I really appreciate it.
I hope that on your book tour you visit Portland.
I hope so too. I would love that, and I will let you guys know if that happens for sure.
Okay, everybody, we look forward to meeting you again in April for our April edition of Black Book Talk. Until then, good reading to you.
See you later.
Listening to KBOO Portland, listener-supported community radio. Stay tuned for Shocks of Sheba, up next after these headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.